This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with my co-host, Alan Cobb, who is also the person that we are interviewing, or at least I will be interviewing Alan, and he can interview himself if he would like to.
We'll do a little self-referral interview.
There we go. In any case, we're going to talk to Alan about the book he has recently written and is coming out and will be available on Amazon, Cobb's Rules.
Well, actually, I changed the name of the book at the last minute to The Rules.
The Rules. At one point, I think it might have, when I saw a manuscript, could it have just said The Rules?
Yes, the most recent.
I thought it had gone that way, and then I back the other way, and now I see we're going to
the Well, rules. The review, the working title was Cobb's Rules, but after a while, I realized that since the rules that are presented in the book in a kind of lighthearted way, I should probably say early on, ostensibly are coming from a voice in a guy's head that claims to be God, although it isn't interested in proving that it's God, and the guy in whose head this voice is speaking doesn't believe for a minute that it is God. Still, if the rules are coming from God, then they shouldn't be named after the author of the book, because it's a novel, it's not gospel. So it's it just didn't seem appropriate. People were wondering if maybe the protagonist's last name was Cobb, and it's not. He doesn't have a last name.
No, I think it's a good choice. And my wife actually brought up the same issue.
Yeah.
So I thought I could see that it was in the air. So yeah. The title of the book is
The official The Rules. The official title is The Rules for the Game of Life.
Right.
And the book came about unexpectedly, I guess would be the simplest way of putting it. I've been collecting these sort of tongue-in-cheek, fairly unhelpful rules for playing the game of life for the last 30 or 40 years. Having read some of them to people off and on, people keep saying, oh, well, you should, make a little book out of them or something. And there are only 18 rules, and I couldn't quite imagine coming out with an 18-page book. So I thought, yeah, well, that'll never happen. And then a few months ago, actually in early September, 2012, I decided that it would be a good exercise. I should just sit down and take this list of 18 concepts and write a little essay explaining each one. And hopefully make the essays funny enough and interesting enough so that people would want to read more than one of them. But when I sat down and started writing them, the first essay immediately turned into a dialogue between this 24-year-old guy who likes to sit on a branch in a pine tree near the house, near his parents' house. And he's sitting in the pine tree one afternoon, and a voice comes to him and says, hi, welcome to the game of life. And he says, who are you? And the voice says, God. And he says, oh, give me a break. How do I know you're God? It seems to me the chances are it's more likely I'm losing my mind. And the voice says, yeah, a lot of people react that way. I wouldn't worry about it. Doesn't matter who I am. Never mind. So it's just not important who the voice is, but he does act like he might be God, although Harvey, the protagonist, has doubts, has serious doubts throughout the book. In fact, he goes for whole decades without even remembering these conversations or any of the rules, which I think reflects a little of how we all handle the insights we get into how to live life. We think we know what we're doing, and then years go by and we suddenly remember that we used to think we knew what we were doing, but we can't even remember what it was. So that's kind of where Harvey is at.
Well, I think it's kind of brilliant the way you couched these rules into this very approachable, easily read sort of story, almost a storybook kind of presentation that brings the most profound kind of understanding of the rules of life into a very easily digestible kind of form that anyone would be sort of wanting to go ahead and keep with this.
Yeah. Well, hopefully people will find it funny. Most of the people I've shown it to so far have laughed in the right places.
But it brings our own life and our own little foibles and our identification with Harvey right there into dealing with these issues.
Yeah. And I should probably mention that part of what I'm doing is that the rules themselves are not terribly useful. They're more like observations about the way it works. And as the voice points out, they're not rules that you have to worry about obeying. They're more like laws of nature. You don't really have a choice. Like rule number one is thou shalt play the game. So right off the bat, we find out that the game of life is not, voluntary. You have to play. And you may not like that rule, and heaven knows we've met people who wished they didn't have to play. And sometimes things happen that make you wish you didn't have to play. But that's not negotiable. And then to sort of ameliorate it a little bit, the second rule in chapter two is thou shalt not necessarily be told the rules. And that seems to be kind of the way it works, too. You know, some people seem to understand how it works better than other people, and some people have an insight that serves them for the rest of their lives or for a while, but other people don't. And the rules that you discover may be different from the rules that I discover, and as we find out in one of the later chapters, that some rules are subject to change. So you can't necessarily rely on any of them.
But it's all directing the attention towards what is actually happening and how it actually works, as opposed to a belief system.
Exactly. And the thing that's kind of fun is that the discussion, the dialogue between the voice and the guy, Harvey, it gets, fairly cosmic or fundamental or profound in places, but that's usually not the rule. The rule is usually so simple that it almost seems like it's not worth mentioning. But I think some of them really are worth mentioning. I guess the best rule, the most important rule in the book is number three, which is to enjoy is optional.
I always like the way you dealt with that in the book.
Yeah, because it's just people are so likely to blame other people for how they feel, or blame circumstances for how they feel. And, other people and circumstances certainly can affect how you feel. But the question is, for how long? And I think that's what the voice is trying to get across, is that as soon as you have some freedom of choice about what to think about, then it's not them and it's not the circumstances. It's your choice. So, I'm trying to provide some useful insight into things, but I'm very much trying not to create, Cobb's commandments or, a book of aphorisms or homilies that people would go around memorizing. There's really very little to be gained from memorizing this particular set of rules. But I think that they're fun and unexpected. And each rule has a kind of wry, almost ironic veracity to it. You feel like it's sort of, it's true. Some rules are subject to change. One of them is there are no rules of thumb. And then Harvey and the voice have to discuss the fact that isn't saying there are no rules of thumb, isn't that a rule of thumb? And if so, then aren't you just contradicting yourself? And if you're just contradicting yourself, how could you be God? Would God contradict himself? And of course, the voice points out that he can do whatever he wants. So there's a You know, God is not reverent about himself. But Harvey is, of course, naturally very concerned about, you know, not saying the wrong thing in the presence of this voice, just in case it is God. and we try not to make too big a point of that. There's no attempt on God's part or the author's part to convince anybody of anything.
And it really, not to give away, I'm somewhat
spoiler alert.
But it moves through the lifetime of this person, and it shows how the rules sort of with the help of the voice. Mm-hmm. But in most people's lives, these things are presented to us.
Yeah.
And the rules of just how it is, how it works, which you can't deny that that this is what you're part of.
Yeah.
Come to the fore, and then they fade again. And that cycle, mm-hmm. I mean, because you're bringing forward the idea of the human being is going through a life cycle,
yeah.
where at moments these like undeniable truths sort of like come face to face with us all, mm-hmm. and in throughout the whole stage of our lives.
Yeah, and it raises the question of you know, what's the place of rules for the game of life in the game of life? How important are they? As human beings, we're trying to understand things, but we try to understand things using our human minds. And there are certain aspects of life that can't be understood. That's certainly, as the voice points out, there are things you might be able to understand, but you might not be able to explain. And there are other things that are just simply too much. You want to understand how the universe works? Not very likely. That's probably not going to happen. So there aren't any rules that explain how the universe works for people. Those are rules. The universe works according to rules. And Harvey, you know, is given a glimpse of that, but it's got nothing to do with how you live your life. And I tried to keep it. I tried to keep it from getting bogged down in details. It's all dialogue. Every chapter, as you know, since you read it, the chapters are 90% dialogue between Harvey and his voice. And we never get into what Harvey does for a living, or the problems he has at the office, or we don't even find out the name of his wife, or anything else. It's the only proper name in the entire book is Harvey. So the whole book has kind of a vaguely, parable flavor to it.
Right, but I think that's what is so great about it. It makes it a kind of a classic that way.
Yeah, it's a little sort of timeless.
Yeah, it's myth.
It's in mythic.
A way, rather than mythic, rather than a realistic novel.
Yeah. And I guess I should point out, for anyone who's wondering whether they could wade through an entire novel that sounds this abstract, it's very short.
No, it is like a parable.
It's like 150 pages of dialogue and 18 chapters. So each chapter is very short, and the dialogue is sort of short and sweet also. It's very much to the point, and hopefully, as I've said a few times, hopefully amusing enough so that people will keep going, and maybe insightful enough so that people will feel like they got something out of it. It'll be interesting to see how people react. I wasn't expecting to write this, and it's one of these things where it kind of just wrote itself. And I don't mean to imply that it's the result of some kind of divine inspiration either. It's just that it was so much fun to talk around these rules with this imaginary all-knowing entity and this imaginary, not terribly brilliant protagonist. I mean, Harvey's not a dullard, but he's not inspiring. He doesn't really seem to be doing anything with his life that anybody would write a book about. And that's why I left out that part. it just wasn't interesting enough. But the dialogues are interesting, and they came. I don't know where they came from. They just all sort of appeared. I'd sit at the computer and start writing about one of the rules, and then this dialogue that didn't even have anything to do with that rule would start coming out, and I'd have to keep nudging it back to the rule, and then all of a sudden the voice would be, you know, presenting rule number 12. And I'd realize that that was a perfect lead-in for rule number 12, but I hadn't expected it.
No, it's a mysterious the creative process is a mysterious thing. And I think it must, I mean, just a little bit of writing I do for Icon, I find it so fascinating where the thoughts come from, the ideas, suddenly a kind of like a coherent body of ideas just gets presented and you just write it out.
Yeah.
And also, you've talked in the past, I think, about Cobb's rules. I think you leaked out the whole idea of Cobb's rules years ago. And I think it must be as big a surprise for you as for me, the form it took when you sat down to write about them.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, these things were creeping into my awareness back in when I was living in Arosa, Switzerland, and working for Mauritius European Research University. And I was walking up the mountain one day, and I was thinking, boy, the game of life sure is a puzzle. And then I thought, but one thing's certain, you have to play. And then I thought, yeah, thou shalt play the game. And that was rule number one. And that led fairly quickly to rules two and three and a couple of others. You know, the second rule is thou shalt not necessarily be told the rules, and then to enjoy is optional. But there's some interesting ones. Rule number five, it's not their fault. I think that has some insight in it. Rule number seven, there are more rules. And there's a footnote on that. Some rules subject to change. That doesn't help. And then there's a whole section of rules that have to do about the game itself, like scores are not announced during the game, prizes may be awarded randomly, your prize may not be for your event. And that all sounds kind of crazy and chaotic, but I think the voice clarifies those things and points out that, you know, there are reasons why those rules exist, and they're good reasons. And I won't spoil it for the radio audience by telling them what all those reasons are. But it's a book that I really wasn't expecting. I thought I was going to write a series of essays, and I was thinking they'll be a little dry, and it's sort of too bad, but how else can you present these things? They're not aphorisms in the usual sense, because they're too minimalist. Plus, they're, you know, slightly ironic, and an ironic aphorism isn't such a great help to people. But then it just immediately turned into a dialogue, and then it wrote itself. The whole thing took about 2 months to write.
No, I was amazed how once you got going, it just sort of like came out.
Yeah, it's like it wanted to get written.
Yeah. So let me just say, for those who have just tuned in, that I, Bill Teeple, on Icon Art Radio, I'm interviewing my co-host, Alan Cobb, who has written the book called The Rules. And we're on KRUU FM, 100.1 FM. I've always thought of you as a writer, because I think the first context I knew of you in was that you were Maharishi's main writer at Meru, and one of the most richest periods in the history of the TM movement. And you had written with Maharishi the catalog for MIU, which was an iconic piece of literature
yes,
in really. The history of the Transcendental Meditation Movement. And so I always thought of you as a writer, but most of the interaction we've had together is around other things.
Yeah.
Around, well, I knew you'd come out of computer programming and management, and you had done work with sound and sound work for Icon and visual art and like that. And so I wondered when the writing was going to emerge again.
Yeah.
And here it is. Have you been thinking for some time about moving back into writing? Because I can see now that you've set this in motion that I see more writing coming out.
I think that's probably what's going to happen. There's another book simmering on the back burner. I can't see it clearly enough to know what it's about. I think it'll deal with some of the same issues, but probably a little bit less humorously. But it'll have much more story, much more of a narrative, and it'll be full-size novel. I just sort of put it in perspective. A short, excellent novel like Cry the Beloved Country is about 60, 65,000 words. Longer novels, you know, big novels get up to a couple hundred thousand words. And then there are a few huge ones like War and Peace, which get up to like 500,000 words or more. But a typical novel, a couple hundred pages, 250 pages, is usually going to be, 60 to 100,000 words. And the rules is 33,000 words. So that makes it officially a novella.
And it made it possible for me to read when I was away for holidays.
Yeah, and it made it possible for me to write it in 2 months.
I seldom get a chance to read these days.
Yeah, I don't read. I don't have much time for reading novels.
I would love
these
to.
These days myself.
I ended up becoming a man of action.
Yes.
Without knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah.
My life has unfolded just like you wrote this book in the last decade.
Yeah,
without planning it to turn out that way.
Well, you know, I have this very faint memory from being about, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old. And I was writing all the time. I loved to write. I mean, I wrote in longhand and loved every minute of it. And then I talked my dad into letting me have an old typewriter from his office. And I hunt and pecked typing on that. And by the time I was in the eighth grade, I'd written hundreds of pages of preteen drivel. but I remember, I must have picked this up from some adult. I don't think I brought it with me into this life, but maybe I did. But I remember thinking, yes, I love to write, and writing is, you know, what I do. And in hindsight, I would have to say it's my strongest suit. It's probably what I do best. But there I was at 10, you know, telling people that, oh, yes, I love to write. And, oh, yes, I get good grades in English and stuff. But I would never make a career of it. And I'm sort of sorry that I came to that conclusion. It seems like some adult should, you know, my dad should have said, well, no, that would be a great thing to make a career out of. But his approach was to encourage me in whatever direction I was going, and I was interested in everything, so I ended up going in all directions. As the man said, he jumped on his horse and rode off in all directions. And so...
But did you have some other direct... When you said, I don't think a writer to yourself at 10 years old or to others, did you have something else in mind?
No, I didn't have anything in mind. And that's the thing. I've always had in the back of my mind the thought that I should be a writer. I mean, Maharishi used to call me the boy who writes. And I thought that, boy, that sounds nice. That's a real compliment. And I've been thinking for the last 10 years... why am I not writing a novel? But every time I sat down to try and think of one, it was like forcing a novel into existence rather than having something that wanted mm-hmm. to be written. And that's why I started on this project to write 18 little essays, because I thought, well, I've got a structure and it's high time I just did it. So I'll write it and it won't be a novel, but it'll at least be an original book, and then I'll, you know, it'll be short and I'll publish it and no one will read it. But then when it turned into a novel, I realized that, you know, it was flowing so effortlessly that maybe it really is time for me to be writing more than anything else. Doesn't mean I'll stop writing music or, you know, doing photography or whatever. And of course, finishing the book, then I'd had to design the cover and all of that stuff. So it's a completely, you know, homebrew project. And it'll be on Amazon. By the time this program is aired, I'm sure it'll already be available on Amazon. And there'll be a Kindle edition for those who would prefer to read it on a liquid ink display. And it'll be available all over the world to millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people. And with luck, you know, a few hundred of them will find out about it. And of those, maybe a couple of dozen will buy a copy.
You just never know.
I'll probably do a reading in Fairfield to introduce it to the local community.
Okay, well, we can do that at ICON or wherever you want, more of a literary place.
Yeah, yeah. And I think people will find it intriguing in this community. It's definitely more of a question how it'll be received by people who don't ever think about this kind of stuff. There's a lot of Maharishi's knowledge in it, but not a shred of movement, language, or jargon. I mean, it's so carefully separate from anything that would be officially movement that I didn't even feel it was appropriate to mention Maharishi in a dedication or an introduction. It's really kind of a didactic fantasy, you know, allegory that encapsulates a lot of what I've learned from the time that I spent in the movement and in life in general. That's it.
Well,
we just ran out of time.
Wow, that went fast.
You've been listening to ICON Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.